arises.
You can always press erase.
Stop.
Does anyone actually go to the files and read these things or listen to them?
We do have them on our website, and we now have 20 talks on the website, and a number of them by you.
And you mean I could go there and listen to one?
Yes, you can. In fact, I've listened to all of them. I can't vouch for how often they're listened to, but I think that...
Well, I've heard people seem to say that they listen,
One reason I asked is that there was a vast library of tapes. Does anybody remember cassette tapes?
Yeah.
There was a vast, vast library of them at the Shambhala Center in Boulder. And I think nobody was using them, and ultimately they were given back to the speakers. I took them right to the dumpster. I don't have a player that'll do.
Play them anymore?
No.
Yeah.
I decided to let bygones be bygones too.
Okay, so good evening, everyone. We probably should begin with a bow. My name is Walter Taylor. I live in Boulder, but I've been privileged to come to Longmont several times, and I enjoyed driving up here tonight. I'd like to hear everybody's name. I think I know most, and I might have some questions. I'm curious, sort of, any real newcomers here tonight?
No, I've been coming here.
You've been coming here for what, a long time?
Yeah, once in a while.
Once in a while, okay.
Fairly new. This is my second time. So it's pretty new. But it was months ago.
Good Diane?
And I've been here probably a couple months, but off and on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a couple months. Mm-hmm. Have we met before?
I think so, yeah. I've been to a couple of your talks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go around with names and anything else you want to say, Tim, would you?
Sure, my name's Tim. I've been coming here for about as long as the center, or the group here has been open, so I've been happy to get here as much as I can.
And I'm Diane. I've been coming a couple months, off and on. I heard about it first from Art Walk, so Art Walk really does work.
Art Walk?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Was there a booth at Art Walk?
Yeah, and got the emails and stuff, and then planted that seed, and I'm like, okay, I've got to just plan this. And then when I came, it was like really wonderful experience. So, yeah, it's been very good.
Yeah, we got that recorded, by the way.
No pressure.
So I'm Elaine, and I'm from Scotland originally, and I live in Longmont. Most of my meditation dharma activities center around the Boulder Shambhala Center, but I like to stop by here, especially whenever I hear Walter giving a talk, or Melissa, or all of the speakers here, right? Yeah.
Hi, Michelle. It's just nice to meet everyone. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm Mouin Arik, and I love it. Yeah, I sleep good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm Eric. Been around for a long time too. Happy to be here.
My name is Noemi, and I am glad I'm here. Thank you for having me.
And my name is Barbara.
One thing I wanted to ask was, some of the newer people, are you familiar with who our founder was in this group, and have you heard of Chökyam Trungpa? Have you?
Yeah.
No, I didn't catch your name, say it again.
Moern Arig.
Moern?
Arig.
Arid.
Moenarik.
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 So, I'm going to talk about Chögyam Trungpa, who came from Tibet. He left Tibet in 1959, spent time in England and in India, and ultimately came to North America in 1970 or 71. Meanwhile, his son was born in 1962. His first son was born in 1962 in India, and this is the first son that I'm talking about. He's got a lot of names, but he writes books under the name of Sakyong Mipham, and I'm going to be recommending this book before we're done tonight, so I'm going to pass it around so you can take a look at it.
And we have it in our library.
So one could check it out?
One could check it out.
Yeah, okay. Hey, check it out.
Check it out. So,
you're not talking about Dalai Lama?
Dalai Lama, yes.
Dalai Lama.
Oh, the Dalai Lama. You know, the Dalai Lama and this man and his father, they're all Tibetan Buddhists, but they're slightly different schools. But they all knew each other. Yeah, Trungpa knew the Dalai Lama, vice versa. Does the Longmont group have any tickets to the Dalai Lama on offer?
Yeah, it is in October.
Okay, yeah. I managed to get one, but I heard of some people that didn't.
Well, we got a block of 40 tickets, and they're all spoken for, as far as I know.
Oh, wow, do you guys do that every time he comes out?
Well, yes,
it's not about for you, because I didn't even try it, but I heard it was very difficult. Yeah. And I know I have friends who
every 30 years when he comes.
They're like, it's this day, at this time, you must call her. Yeah. Best of luck.
Yeah. So, I was casting about for something to talk about here, and I noticed that last week, at least according to the webpage, you had a talk on art in everyday life. Did that happen? Was it good?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody want to recapitulate for me? What happened last week?
Oh.
Short form.
Yeah, we did an exercise in eating an orange.
Oh, cool.
So just this real sensory experience. And some people talked about the sensory part of that, and other people talked about the thought part of that. And then we talked a little bit about how we sort of didn't want thoughts, we just wanted the sensory, but the thoughts were okay, so there was some of that. Other people probably have other remembrances of that talk. Mm-hmm. What do you remember, Rick?
Well, I don't think she talked, this is Elaine Ewan we're talking about, I don't remember that she talked that much about art so much. But, you know, everyday life, yes, and like how you relate to the really everydayness of everyday life is interesting.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Well, anyway, I had that in my mind, that there had been this talk on art in everyday life. And I thought, well, I think a lot about art because I'm a painter on the side. I specialize in outdoor paintings with watercolor of natural things, particularly streams and lakes and that sort of thing. And what came to me as something that's interested me for a long time, having to do with Dharma and having to do with art, is the question of ambition. That when we do something, and it doesn't really have to be art, but I notice it more when I'm working on a painting, all of a sudden we have these expectations for ourselves, and we want things to be perfect, or we want somebody to notice, or maybe in a different league we want to get paid. And And the question is, or could be, what are we doing with that? You know, how is it possible to have a meaningful relationship with some kind of desire for recognition or pay or promotion or whatever it might be, some kind of recognition? How is it possible to have a meaningful relationship with that and still be following the Buddhist path of, well, in the severest form, the path of renunciation, or as we know it, the path of Shambhala, where we really are supposed to notice ego formation, notice the me plan, and come to terms with it. Anybody want to comment on this before we say more?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I guess one way to say it is that if I get caught up really insisting that I've really got to have a really good finished product, is that sort of ego-based, and should I just drop doing that, or should I find some way to make sense of that? And here, I made a list of various things where this might come up, and I think they're all something for everybody on this list, I'm pretty sure. Like any time we involve ourselves in a sport or a game, you know, we have this insistence upon winning, and at the same time, not only that, but we really care about our performance, and we seem to be very self-involved with that. Every time I come here to teach a class, or maybe you teach a class in some other context, again, there's this performance, you want to be recognized as having done a great job. And everything we do at work, we're looking for some kind of feedback on, looking for some kind of personal confirmation. What about spiritual attainment? I'm a great meditator, and I want you to know that, and I want you to feed that back to me. What else could you think of that's...
I was thinking of that all of these things in their way are kind of self-expression. So mm-hmm. It can even be the words that you use, or, you know, for me it's sort of this, the profound thing that I want to say that people go, ah. So
that's what you're hoping for.
Yeah. You know, so I got, you know, so I've worked on being very articulate so that people go, ah. And then there's some sort of feedback to me about I'm a good person, or that it's worthy for me to speak. I think it's important that I speak because I am articulate. There's a bit of a, there's a not paying attention to other people actually when I do that. It's me.
Oh, you mean Facebook?
What's that?
Oh, you mean Facebook?
Yeah, and I'm not on Facebook, you know. But I'd probably do the same self-expression in something. In a written form, then, you know.
Anybody else want to say anything?
Well, just follow up on that a little bit. I mean, some of the great artists, like Van Gogh or somebody, you know, nobody liked his work. Nobody liked his art during his lifetime. It was after he was dead that it is selling for millions now. And that's really interesting, because in terms of what you're saying, because he had no respect, you know, in his lifetime from anyone that I could see. Yeah.
And yet he had to keep on doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what got me started thinking about ambition as a topic. And then I started thinking about, well, what could I do with that? Or how could we look into what it means to be ambitious. And in here, there's a section called the tiger section. And that's the section I want to talk about today. The word ambition occurs in there. So just to give a little background here, there's four sort of totem animals of Shambhala. They're on these banners here. They're almost impossible to see. If you get up close, you can see there's a tiger on the orange one. There's a snow lion on the second white one. The red one has a mythic creature called the Garuda, a bird with hands that never lands. And the fourth animal on the bluish banner is dragon. And they kind of progress from earthbound up into the sky. And the earthbound ones are more practical and more at the level of our human self. So that's where we're going to start here, is talking about the tiger. And by the way, before I go on, I should say that what I'm talking about here is a really personal question. I mean, only each, and thanks for sharing on this, really the only person who really knows where we are with this is ourselves. That, you know, am I going overboard with a sort of desire and a personal attachment to it, or am I more like Van Gogh and able to just be and create? So the image that he's giving us here in this book, and by the way, this book came out in 2005, is really a remarkable book in that the topic of these animals and their traits and their accomplishments was a pretty arcane topic before, not in any public teachings. And there's something about it in the Sacred Path of the Warrior, but impossible to understand. Whereas this one here is been made very down to earth and will bring you along in surprising ways. So the image here is the tiger, which is said to be meek. Meek here, sometimes taken as synonymous with contented or able to experience contentment. Meek is not taken so much in the sense of personal diminishment or hiding oneself under a barrel or something, but there's apparently one Tibetan word that can be translated as meek or as contented, and that's what it is. And another trait that's talked about in this book a whole lot is the trait of discernment. So one thing we're supposedly learning in meditation, so if I didn't say so before, all of this is reference to meditation, things we can personally experience having meditated a little bit, things we can experience in meditation. And the big quality for the tiger in this context is that of discernment, which he also likes to use the Tibetan word payu, apparently just means discernment. And it meaning discerning of what's a good thing to do. Usually in the context of social context. So the tiger is thought of as putting one paw after another and kind of knowing a good place to place the paws to achieve some kind of contentment, to be everything he can be, he or she. Has anyone here taken the class, the Shambhala class on contentment in everyday life? You have, so you know all about
it. Oh, yes. I was very contented with that class.
Yeah. Well, among other things, our class tonight is kind of an advertisement for the contentment class, because we're talking very much about the same things. Yeah. To tell whether things are wholesome. To be alert to what's wholesome for us and what is not. Cultivation of respect. Able to sit quietly and survey the landscape is one thing that's written here. And so often we don't do this. We're just, you know, bing, 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 bouncing around like a pinball machine. But, you know, if we could just sit back and kind of get a look at the landscape, maybe we'll be more content. Humble. And free of arrogance. Those are the kind of traits of this mythic tiger that we're trying to be in tune with. So all of this begins in meditation. We can notice when thoughts steal our mind away. It may take a long time to notice it, but that's kind of what we're here for. Is everybody on board with that?
Yes,
I am.
The meditation is not to stop thoughts, but it's to be aware of when a thought is taking us away. Often takes us right out of the room, and maybe to another country, who knows, but we're able to notice that. And as we develop that ability to notice, we may actually be able to notice in our ordinary life of where to place the pause. Just, you know, how to actually not cause more trouble in the world. How to show some respect and appreciation of the phenomenal world. And another thing to realize of connection with meditation here is that our breathing is actually the first saying hello to contentment. Breathing is completely natural. It's really got everything you need. So far, there's enough oxygen here. We can just relax into the breathing. And then, of course, other things happen. The mind wants to do its thing. But there is always the possibility of coming back. It's a home to come back to, relating to the contentment of the tiger. And he says somewhere here in the early parts of the tiger section, he says that ambition, we are still talking about ambition ultimately, is often based on discontent, or maybe the same thing as discontent, that we have the possibility of just being. Just the breath goes in, the breath goes out, and our goodness is such that we could just be there. But we start thinking about something, and I want to do that, I want to do that, let's get on the bus and do it. And all of a sudden there's some ambition has formed. So I thought this point would be a good time to review or make it new for anyone who needs it new, would be a good time to review what are the Buddha's noble truths. Would somebody like to sum up what the first noble truth is? Tim, what about you? What is the first noble truth?
I believe that the first noble truth is the truth of suffering, and that suffering exists, and it's part of all of our lives, kind of inside and kind of inside and out, I guess I would put it.
Inside and out, yeah, that makes it pretty pervasive, huh? And somebody else, what's the second noble truth, or what?
I'm going to go before we run out of noble truths that I can remember.
Yeah. I mean, the third one might be difficult. Huh?
I think the second one is the cessation of suffering. Is that?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's the cause of suffering, or the.
The cause.
So.
You're talking about the cause of the...
No, I was going to say, I don't know them, so don't you?
So that was the one I didn't remember.
Yeah. You want to say something?
So you're talking about the cause of suffering?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The cause of suffering is ego.
Ego. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Can you say a little more about what is ego, or how does ego arise? Or?
And this, I think, I'm assuming...
Yes.
Economics.
Well, that's part of it, yeah.
And I think the third one is religion.
It's a what?
Religion.
Religion? No. Well, we're just going to do the first two right now.
Okay.
So, we do have this tendency to suffer. That, you know, either you don't have it and you want it, or you get something you didn't want, or you get what you want and then you're terrified somebody's going to take it away from you. But no matter how it works out, you're kind of stuck. I'm kind of stuck. And the cause of that is attachment or ego fixation, or just plain ego, as you say, that we build up a need, sort of. Well, actually, there's a whole theory that we won't go into tonight of so-called Abhidharma, where people talk about exactly how that builds up. But it's called skandhas. Did you study skandhas here ever? Okay. But another way to say it is that the part of the mind is not content. Even though we could just sit there and breathe, like I said, there's a kind of discontent that shows up and has got to have this new thing, that new thing, new friends on Facebook or anywhere else. It's got to blast off opinions on Facebook. It's just... Facebook is just a wonderful sort of microcosm illustrating what the world is like for us, or how we do things. Everybody should be on it just to experience the first noble truth all over again. and the second. And in this book, there's a particularly... nice word for ego fixation, and it's, I think, coined by Sakyong Nipam himself, and I think first widespread usage in this book, and that's what he calls the me plan, that we get involved with endless planning. I think every one of us would have to admit that when we're on a meditation cushion, some of what we're involved with is planning, writing the script, with our self-installing role. And, it could be good planning or bad planning. It could be you're terrified of some meeting tomorrow and you could have a script for that, or you're going to see your beloved tomorrow and you have a different script for that, but, you know, it's still, you're writing the script. And for a broader view of this, you could say that there's a basic bewilderment that happens. Trungpa describes that in some of his writings, that you just sort of open our eyes and it's so overwhelming and there's so much that we have to close down a little bit and put things in order and stack things up and make a neat array of things, and the sort of overall force doing that becomes ego. And part of the ego illusion is an illusion of poverty. Poverty mentality is there for all of us. And so part of, and it's really not realizing that we have this basic goodness, that we have, we're actually okay. We're actually well equipped to be in this world and do our thing. But it's trusting in that can be difficult. And not trusting in that is a part of this whole ego illusion, kind of poverty mentality. And so, you know, the more poverty mentality we have, the more ambition can play a role. That, I've got to beat this thing. Or, you know, I absolutely must get a certain score on the golf course or I'll still be impoverished. Or, I mentioned golf because the succulent likes to play golf. And, you know, I wonder how he deals with that.
It must be difficult with the ropes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they learn how. That's, I don't know. So, what he's advising us here in this whole section on Tiger is taking charge of our life through meditation, paying attention to all the things that I've talked about so far. And that's our ground here, is the fact that it's possible to actually pay attention to our life. Maybe I should say, we act sometimes in these meditation centers as if the only thing to do was meditate. An hour a day, or 20 minutes a day, or an hour on weekends, or whatever you do. But actually, once you start meditating, there's also something known as post-meditation. And post-meditation means the rest of your life. Anything that comes up, or anything that you experience, and can we take that same awareness that's happening in meditation, that same mindfulness, paying attention, and can we pay attention? It's again back to the tiger putting his feet in the good places. Can we kind of get a little bit past some of that meat plan? Can we at least soften up the meat plan as we go along? We meditate, we can sometimes settle our mind and reduce confusion and recognize fixation. So coming out of meditation into our life, we might remember, not intellectually, but remember in the body what it is to be settled. And bring that to our everyday life. Here's a couple of things that the Sakyong brings along with him as he tells the story of the tiger. He says, it's so important to be helping others. He said, that's probably the fastest way that you can improve your meditative skills. Because to actually be helping somebody else really sort of defeats the purpose of the me plan. The me plan can't really function so well when you're helping somebody else.
I totally agree.
You totally agree, yeah.
I do that every day. I'm poor, but if I have $2, somebody needs $1.
You give it to them.
I give it to them. Yeah.
And the other big thing that he likes to include here is the idea of exertion. He says that the tiger has got this discrimination, or paiu, but that's not any good if you can't exert yourself a little bit and do something. And he says, you could have exertion, able to really put one foot in front of another, but if you don't have the discrimination, it's not much use, or could even be going in the wrong direction. So it's like two wings of a bird, both the exertion and the discrimination. So those things that I've said so far kind of set the tone. They give the idea of what it's like to have a tiger, for us to emulate the tiger. And now let's talk about the fruition of this, which is contentment, as your class. It's actually possible to feel some kind of contentment in life. I was saying this before, but I'm going to say it again now. That it's kind of that same thing where we're breathing and we can just let thoughts move on like clouds. That same contentment. Not insisting on a whole lot more than we have. Appreciating. Appreciating just to be born as a human. Does that make sense? Appreciating to be born as a human? It doesn't have to have any big religious event. It's just sit here and open your eyes and see the or taste the orange like you did last week. That was part of an appreciation of being human. He says, desire is endless, but Paiyu tells us when to stop, to find a resting place. And he says, merely fulfilling desires is never going to work, because every desire fuels another desire. Is that true in your life? Every drink tells you you want another drink. Every friend on Facebook tells you you want another one. Every
no.
No. You got enough. Huh?
Every spoonful of Cherry Garcia.
Yeah.
Tells me I want another one. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. I've mentioned this here before.
About Cherry Garcia.
Yeah. For some reason, I can resist most things in life. Uh-huh. But what? One spoonful of Cherry Garcia, and it's just clear the meaning of life. Yeah. Is to have another one.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, that's kind of the main theory that I wanted to get over tonight. Anybody want to comment on what we said so far?
Yeah, I was kind of just thinking about the tiger and the discernment and the exertion and finding that balance and how do you do that, because sometimes I'll be too passive and I'll be too disconcerting. I'll be too passive. And then I find myself often being too excessive. And then I go too much. And I know last time I was here, way back when, we were talking about the middle path. And I was
this is a middle path.
I was wondering if he was talking about how to balance that, because I find it very hard to be cautious, but yet be trying to do something, to be me. You know, just like the painter, like he cannot paint without brushes, so he has to work to buy brushes to paint, but he has to paint. Even if he's never famous, that's what Van Gogh had to do in that example. He was just a painter. That was his purpose, regardless of fame or anything like that, but still had to work and buy paintbrushes and exert himself and do that and paint and be all that. That middle path basically was really what I was wondering. It's like if you had an answer for that or suggestions of how to balance.
Well, how to balance it? Well, it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Sorry?
You are balancing, it sounds like. You're noticing that, too passive sometimes, too aggressive some other times.
But not in the moment. Only in hindsight. In hindsight, I'm very intelligent. In the moment, I make bad decisions.
Yeah.
I'm guilty. No, but, you know.
Not by Vedic. You're not persecuted.
I know, right? Just self-persecuted sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, I think that the way the Buddha taught and the way we experience these things as apprentice warriors is that we do experience the edges of the road rather than the middle. It's like you're trying to drive it down a road in the dark, so all of a sudden you hear the right tire hitting gravel, so back to the center, and then all of a sudden you hear the left tire hitting gravel. And that's, you know, that's how you steer.
Yeah, we don't always notice when we're in the middle and things are balanced, or appreciate it properly, you know. It's more looking for the edges, I guess.
But, you know, as you're looking for the edges, that's the path. That's the only real way of growth here. It's like in meditation, we don't perfect anything, we just notice. We're able to notice, In fact, in one of his other books he mentions, you can be too lax, or too, what's the opposite word he uses?
He says tight, too tight or too loose.
Too tight, too loose. You can be too loose in your meditation, and you can notice that, or you can be too tight, and you can notice that. And it's in that back and forth of noticing that the sweet spot is discovered.
But there's this ambition.
There is this ambition.
To stay with the sweet spot.
Yeah.
To always have the sweet spot.
Does it work?
No.
Okay.
But there is that ambition, you know? Oh, that felt so good. I want that, like, all the time now.
Okay, I want to finish. I want to come back to the starting time of this. I want to just say what I have found when I do these outdoor paintings. What I have found is a way to get some kind of, or to put at rest the struggle about ambition. And that is that I go to a place where I want to paint something, and I just sit there for half hour, kind of like meditating, except my eyes are open and I'm taking in whatever the scene is, that, and I'm not just looking at it, but I'm, you know, listening to the water move or the insects or birds or whatever that may be there, cars in the background. And just to be, appreciate. And when I feel really ready, then I pick up a brush and I just look at that white page. you can actually appreciate the space rather than attempting to fill the space all the time or to fill it instantly. And Trungpa said in another book, somewhere in the Sacred Path of the Warrior, Trungpa says, it's all just makeup on space. Do you get what I...
Makeup on empty space.
Makeup applied to empty space. That's what everything is, according to Trungpa. So, it's like this book of matches. It's just some red makeup there, green here. When you're about to paint something, you can appreciate that you know, you're not really doing anything except kind of pushing around some makeup here on this paper, and it's actually a very thin layer, and it's basically empty, the whole thing. And if I do that, and then the next thing I do is I don't attempt anything in particular. I see what happens with a brush. I make several paintings in the same location and just see what happens. Well, of course, ambition arises anyway, but that's my way of trying to get past it in a way so that I just have the activity in some kind of meaningful way. Realizing the sort of empty nature of it. And things like that can probably be done anywhere. I mean, I think the good tennis players, they just play tennis. And then, you know, they may be troubled by the ambition some other time, but sometimes when they're just playing, that's all they do. Anybody want to comment on this or some other way you've worked with ambition?
I can offer one that is far away from the kind of things we think of art as artistic, which is programming a computer.
Uh-huh.
You can have that. If what you're doing is, I want to get this done to impress my boss or something like that, then you're doomed. I mean, there's no way. But if you just really relate to the truth of what the program is trying to do and...
So you see some inner beauty to it or something.
Yeah, and it just expresses, it's like writing a poem, except you're writing it, you know, on a computer.
It has its own life.
Exactly.
You just are allowing, giving space.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I like that, it has its own life, yeah, so that the whole tiger aspect of appreciation of what's there, appreciating other life that's there.
I like what you said about just sitting there, because I've been on hiking trails in America and I've noticed that people are always moving. You know, sometimes people would take photographs, but mostly they're moving.
Whereas you could just, once you get to a good place, there. You should sit there. Yeah.
I mean, I once went to, what's it called, Lion's Gulch. It's up on the way to Estes Park. It takes you to a high meadow.
It's gorgeous.
It's very, I don't know if I could do it.
What did you say, Diane?
I said it's gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
But it's a very steep trail and you're exhausted. And actually by the time you get there, you do want to kind of hang out. And I remember I hang out on that trail, on the meadow, and there were like these homesteads. But I was just, at first I was just sort of drinking it in, and then I saw a western bluebird. You know, and you know, like you're listening to the water, and you probably saw some animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just being there.
One of my favorite places to go is the Botanic Gardens in Denver.
Mm.
And there are some people that just sort of march through it, you know. And I, you know, in the context of what we're talking about here, I mean, quite capable of sitting down and like looking at a flower for 10 minutes, you know. And that's really what I really treasure. Not always. And sometimes I'm just lost in my own thoughts too. But, yeah. But when you can actually spend time with a flower, that's really lovely.
Yeah, I like to weave, and I think some of my problems with ambition is I want to make something for somebody else. So the whole thing about weaving, it's very mathematical, which is kind of not my bent, and it's very it can be very precise. And when I want to give something to somebody else, of course it has to be perfect, which is impossible. So what I've decided to do is to just put something on the loom that's not for anybody. Mm-hmm. So, and just play. Just let
and just
it,
play.
And it, there's a, like a resistance. It's like, oh, you know, it's really funny to watch myself. It's like, it's not going to be for anybody, Barbara. It's just going to be for you to have the experience of this. And that's the sole purpose of this. But it's hard. And I don't know why particularly, but it's hard for me to do that. It's like playing with it instead of doing it.
Well, I like where you're going with that, because I used to do portraits when I was younger, pen and ink, and I recently took up again. I don't have a lot of time for it because I work full time, but when I was younger, I was in art class. There would be like still life drawings, and I'd be kind of afraid that my drawing didn't really look quite like the thing. You know, it would be slightly, if you looked at it in a mirror, you'd see it was like this. Anyway, but what I find now, I don't care. So I have this friend who's got a beautiful face, and she put a picture on Facebook, and I just went, oh, I gotta draw those lines. And I noticed I didn't really care if it was right. I just sort of did what I felt would be fun to do. I like this line here, and she had hair that was like water. And it started out, I drew the lines, but as I more and more filled in the ink, the more I filled in the spaces, black and white, it looked like a river. It looked like a stream. And all the time I wasn't thinking it's going to be any good. I was just sort of listening. And if I listened, I think I need to fill in this bit. Not this bit, this bit. But it wasn't intellectual. It was just sort of... And that's kind of fun. I mean, that's art is really fun.
That spark is what we're talking about here. It's that spark of basic goodness, ultimately, that we can all experience in our lives somehow, somewhere. And that's the ultimate message of Shambhala Buddhism. It's the capacity to reconnect with our basic goodness. And I'm not saying you've got to go do some artistic thing or be a computer programmer. And cooking is another area where all these kinds of things can...
I think listening is a virtue.
Listening?
Yes.
Yeah.
It begins with yourself. Paying attention to who you are and being passionate. Just sit there and just listen or to somebody.
Like Sean was listening, with being too aggressive or too passive.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, listening is perfect. Listening is perfect because it's like the most simple act of goodness.
Yeah.
And it can do so much, and it takes, and all you have to do is breathe. Listen. Mm-hmm. It's at its core. Yeah. Basically,
that's what I want to say.
I think that is a nice view of kind of everyday life kind of becoming sort of an art, you know, that, like you say, you don't really have to accomplish something by it, but sort of doing it for its own sake, you know, that it's can really be good. And that's what I always have to remind myself of, you know, sort of that expression, you know, rather than the feedback, you know, or the doing it right kind of thing, you know. Is that
it's like we're chasing a purpose.
Right, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and if you can kind of somehow drop that purpose, but keep the really essence, you know, yeah. the good, the best parts of it.
Goodness. The journey.
Okay, folks, it's getting on for 9.
Okay.
Anyone have any last word they want to say?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you all. I can't do it alone. Well, do we dedicate the merit here?
Do people, I don't think everyone knows the words. Let's just bow.
Okay. Yeah.